Hello and welcome to The Undermined, a podcast about brute war AI development. My name is Shonko, your host from makingcomputerdothings.com. Let us begin. Welcome back to The Undermined podcast on this thundery, rainy evening. My guests this evening are Jaegers. Hi, Jaegers.
Hi.
And Nathan Roth, aka Antigo. Hi there.
Hello.
And long time no see, MacRave. Hi.
Hello, friends.
And with that, our first order of business is usually the same, which is what you've been up to. First, I'm going to ask Jaegers, you, because you are a key person in the GBW API development, is it fully 4.4 compliant yet? Because last time I heard there are still some bugs, or it was just not done how it is right now.
So yeah, it's compliant, but well, it still doesn't have latency compensation. So if your bot uses that, it can't use GW API. But if you don't use it, it should work just fine. Yeah. There are no known bugs, I think, except for, well, if you need latency compensation.
That sounds good. That means that most bots can use it. And other than that, have you been up to anything fun lately?
Not so much these last weeks. I've been checking out some small issues of the Java port of BWEM for hitchhikers, because Dan was saying that was one of the things he needed to get his bot to work on that map, but so far not much progress.
Oh, so hitchhikers is a map that was not clear from context.
Yeah, hitchhikers is a map.
Next up, Antiga, what you've been up to lately? How is your bot doing on the ladder? What do you think about it?
It's been doing all right. So I re-enabled it to test a couple of things. It has run up to sort of 7th to 9th a couple of times, and then sort of settles in the sort of 15th to 25th position and just sort of runs around. Mostly just using it to do a little bit of feedback for Jay and feed him some information, which unfortunately Jay is sort of on a bit of a hiatus. He had some family stuff going on, so we'll see where that all goes with Steamhammer.
Yeah, we are talking about Jay Scott, the author of Steamhammer, which is a daddy of a lot of bots on the ladder. I'm just saying this so the less technically or less historically versed SSE AIT audience can relate and know the context here. Okay, that being said, it is a Steamhammer based bot, which is a very good base, but I read that it badly needs some kind of updates, and Jay is working on that.
Yeah, I think the Steamhammer bot families will be in a lot better place once they get upgraded to 4.4 as a base. I think we'll see some pretty significant revisions. Microwave's author started the process and had to walk away from it due to some underlying issues that I think him and Jay need to solve together. And hopefully those changes and fixes will trickle down to the rest of the University of Alberta Steamhammer-based bots in the long term.
Yeah, all right. Next up is MacRave, and the obvious question is the AITT tournament, which stands for AI Tiny Tournament, or what is the correct abbreviation here?
It's AI TinyCraft Tournament. I don't know why I call it that. It just seemed pretty. That went pretty well. I finally got around to casting it. It's mostly just because I was really lazy and just didn't feel like getting 4.4 environment installed and making time to actually cast it and run the games is, you know, 4 or 5 hours of work. That actually happened last week.
I was watching it, and of course we memed long and memed hard and recommended all the stupid music we could. It was a fun affair.
Oh, it's all about just like dicking about, really. You gotta have as much fun as you can. I mean, it's about bots that are really doing the silliest things and just try to enjoy the fun that they have.
And that is important. And I hope next year or next occasion there will be more participants.
Yeah, I think the constraints were a little crazy, that people just really didn't want to do islands, and maybe that scared people off, people being busy.
You mentioned before the cast that you have some kind of project with Antigua. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, it's mostly just with my bot. Antigua and I have been working on it. Been on a Path of Exile break for 2 weeks, but before that, he and I were basically watching replays, creating a list of issues and closing them out slowly. And, you know, it's resulted in some pretty good progress. McRae the other day, I think, was up to like 6th or 7th. It beat its ELO record. Still at 10th right now, which isn't too bad. Still quite a lot of obvious bugs that he and I are working through. Some of the other features I can't really talk about, but I will tell Dan, yes, recalls are happening. No, I'm not going to tell you when.
That would be the point of it, no?
I'm just baiting him a little bit. He saw that I researched a recall, and he thinks that that's happening, so I'm going to let him think what he wants.
He's been doing good work. I was just looking at, we've got a bug charting sheet, and out of 89 bugs that were originally listed, only 18 are still open. So that's a lot of work that's been done in the last month.
Yeah, it comes down to after bugs, it's build optimization. That stuff, I usually turn my nose up to that because I just don't care. That's not the fun for me. The fun for me is making my units do cool things.
That's not necessarily how you win games, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Antigua is the one that pushes me and says, you should not be doing this. You should be doing this. I'm like, fine. begrudgingly go over to my build order, change some numbers, go, here you go.
Oh my god, Dad, not again.
That's literally what it's like. He's like, go to your room and don't come out until your homework's done. And I'm like, but Dad, I don't want to study PVZ anymore. He's like, go to your room.
I feel that is an actual scenario that is happening somewhere in Korea.
I wouldn't doubt it, honestly.
It's fun. These larger development projects for tournament prep, you got to have some level of organization and stuff to, there's just too much going on, and you got to have checklists and all that preparatory stuff that really sort of helps keep people organized. And then you just keep working on it. They're an endless slog, and you have to kind of prioritize what you've got time for and energy for. And it's hard because often the stuff that is really fun is not the stuff that's fun to fix. It's really fun to add like skills and cool things and strategies to bots. It's really sucks fixing bugs, sometimes, and that's hard.
But you have a perverse pleasure in finding out the bugs and pointing out flaws in other people's code. I mean, just you specifically. That's a general thing.
Yeah, authors, that I work with, like Grave and other people, it can be kind of hard because sometimes authors, they think it's good, and then, I can look and watch the games and find, a dozen flaws, they get kind of depressed, you know, because it's this long list of stuff that needs fixed, and you know, it just sort of never ends. But you know, that it's a, you know, when you start closing lots and lots of bugs out, the cumulative effect is pretty large. I was talking with Dan a few weeks ago, and we were talking about SSCAIT last year, and even a really serious bug for Purple Wave was like a 1% win rate difference, you know. You know, and so you'd fix the super serious affecting bug that affected multiple different parts of the bot and all sorts of stuff that was broke because of it, and you would get 1% extra win rate out of it. And most bugs were like worth like 0.something% of win rate, you know, and you had to close a dozen minor ones to get a 0.1%. You know, it's a really hard slog.
Yeah, what do you mean that, like, you remember that bug I had where it was like building gates in people's base? What do you mean that's a bug? That's a feature.
That's, you know, like, that's also a feature.
Oh, it was fantastic. Like, there was a game where I was playing Mad Mix, and he put gates in my main, and I put gates in his main. It was absolutely so potato, and I lost it. But
that was a pretty fun one, yeah. Because you enabled proxy gates, and you disabled them being in the enemy main, but the way that you encoded it made it so it only proxied in the enemy main.
Yeah, so. I have to start in a start location. It's like the stupidest thing ever. I was looking at how Lucutus did it, and I'm like, I could do this in a little bit shorter code, and it's not as optimized, and I liked it a little bit more that way. And, yeah, it ended up being that I just reversed the logic of one line by accident.
And what's funny about that is it won some games that it probably wouldn't, even though the whole thing was terrible. It won some games it probably wouldn't, because horror gates of themselves are really annoying, and some bots handle them really poorly. So the bot was picking out that strategy and running it, even though it was a mess.
Yeah, and then sometimes it was like, it would see the enemy is doing two gate and send all the zealots home. So it'd be producing stuff and sending them home from the enemy base as the zealots were. That's just so stupid.
Congratulations, yeah. You bamboozled yourself.
That's most of the bug.
Another one that's still ongoing that's a painter is would try and proxy gate. Well, now that it's not trying to do it in the enemy base, it doesn't do this, but it was trying to proxy gate and trying to build the gates on the enemy creep and getting stuck. things that you encounter, you know.
I lost my own Zerg because of that. It's so stupid. We could go on for hours about how many of the stupid bugs I've actually found. Actually, I'm going to look to see what the worst one is, and we'll talk about
it. Yeah, there's some pretty epic ones in the list. You could just open up the closed ones in the tracker. And
I think it's the best, and you know that you're in the right hobby when you enjoy your bot getting absolutely wasted by some stupid mistake.
Yeah, some of them were just small things that took like a little bit of time to fix, but some of them were just, you know, pound your head on the desk, and then when you solve it, you're like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, when your highly advanced if statements betray you.
Oh, I know. Remember, Antigua, remember the one where I was using units that were being trained in my combat sim, but it treated them as being instantly on their target, so...
Oh, yeah.
If I had a lot of production, it immediately assumed I just had, like, if I started 5 goons, it was like, oh my god, we have, like, 6 goons and they have 2. It's like,
time to fight, yeah. That's another that thing. Do not include units that are building in your combat sim, and it's really easy to do this. He's not the first author to make this mistake.
And wait, really?
You're not the first one.
Oh, my god.
Several people have made this mistake, and it's a pretty easy one to have happen. That's, oh man.
But well, if they're gonna pop, then maybe it can turn the fight, so maybe you should
plant
and engage in bait. So, I mean, it's situational, right?
Situationally, it could be good, but the way I was handling it was like, if this unit's training, its destination is on top of the building it's training out of. Therefore, it's instantly on its destination and ready to fight and gets full value in the combat. So it caused every unit on the map to assume that it had instant reinforcements, like they were being paradropped in.
It's pretty silly. I think the Observer one is still pretty hilarious that you fixed just in the last few days, where you had Observers counted as ground units or something. You know, they spawned between three structures. They couldn't fly anywhere because it didn't think it could move them.
Yeah, that one affected like Corsairs and everything too. So they'd be flying around and then they would get stuck on a cliff and they wouldn't have anywhere to go because they assumed that where they're standing is unwalkable. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, yeah. This is not without a real-life predecessor example, because when socialist countries had these five-year plans, they included like half-done stuff in the production quotas as well. Just something that fits the minimum requirements of being a car is a car, and we met our production quotas this five-year plan. Maybe it's just like making these five-year plans for your StarCraft bots. Because that worked out so well.
That's like saying my bot is an artificial intelligence. I mean, I guess, but you know, not really. Not very smart. Though I think my bot is infamous for just the most ridiculous bugs ever. And we're gonna leave it at that. Some of them are just so legendary.
Well, you need to talk about your new pathing system while we're on this topic, because some of this is you might have some of the best ground pathing systems now of anyone. So might be worth talking about a little bit. I don't know if I'm going to spill the cheese on how or not. I don't know if that's secret.
That's pretty fair. So one thing I've done in the past like 2 months, I started really abusing a lot of JPS pathfinding to just move units to certain destinations to do things. Like if I wanted to move some goons to a certain expansion, I didn't want to rely on Brood War pathfinding because there's tons of bugs in that. And, you know, workers getting stuck on maps like Benzene and Heartbreak Ridge, just too many bugs to rely on it. So now I've been using jump point search to create a path somewhere, and every unit creates a path to its destination. So the way my code works is every frame a unit will figure out its goal. It finds a goal somewhere globally on the map that it's being assigned to do. Usually it's, you know, finding the closest units and assigning to them to this goal. Within that goal, we find a destination, which is where we're going to be pathing it to. So in terms of like a goal, like attacking it or preventing an enemy from expanding, the goal is the expansion. The destination is the closest choke point between that goal and their home base. I send my goons, for example, or some zealots or Dark Templar. I can choose whatever units I want, grab the closest ones, have them path towards that destination, and then depending on what command that they want to do, they will either move towards that or they'll maybe attack something close to them. But if they have nothing close by, they will actually move towards that destination along path points. And the way it works is it iterates the path, finds a point that is a minimum distance away that I think was like 250 pixels or so that started to cause the least amount of issues, was around 250 pixels, and the units move along that path instead. And so now I'm not using Brood War pathing for pretty much anything. I'm actually just using my own.
It sounds pretty advanced.
It's functional. It's pretty quick too.
And during this testing period, did you have any kind of testing methodology, or just play a lot of games and try to analyze them?
It was mostly just Bazel replays, which, like I have said in the past, it is the best resource for data, because you are playing probably 10 to 15 games a day against various opponents that you wouldn't otherwise. So I usually just use that as a reference. There's plenty of data there, enough to find something to code for the day, basically. Like some sort of loss that could have been prevented, or a win that could have gone better.
Yeah, it is a tremendously helpful resource. How about you, Jaegers? Did you make any progress on your bot lately?
No, not really. This summer is going to be the start. just uni stuff for 2 weeks, and then I'm done. So yeah, not much. I've started on working on my own map analysis library, but I'll probably end up using BWEM VM in the end. Not sure yet. So I've dabbled in some stuff, but nothing serious yet. But this summer I have some free time.
Did you encounter difficulties, and that's why you're switching to BWEM, or just don't have the time to fully develop your own?
Well, it's more of a why reinvent the wheel situation, I guess.
I mean, reinventing the wheel every now and then is important, so...
There's been several map analyzers, and they're really hard to write. It's almost like writing a bot itself. And it's really a kind of a rough project, and it's really technical. So, because there's lots of weird, strange features on maps, and for every rule, there's an exception, and all this sort of stuff that I think often people don't realize how difficult that is. And so it's one of those things that is a good candidate for libraries and shared effort, I think. And, you know, we have some libraries that are available. They're not perfect, but...
Yeah, I feel like using BWM is like driving a car with a somewhat flat tire. You're always correcting for it. You always have to do some sort of hacky solution for something that BWM doesn't do properly. A good example is choke points in BWM. If you ask for each of the endpoints and draw a line, it doesn't really fit what the actual choke points geometry looks like. And so in BWB, I actually added a line of best fit function that I got some help with from Ankh Mayador, whatever his real name is. And it actually improved the geometry of the chokes a lot.
Yeah, instead of a car with a flat tire, I would use the analogy like the French guy who had his car broke down in the middle of the desert, so he built a motorcycle out of it. That feels more closer to it.
Wait, that was an actual thing?
Yeah. What car was that? Was it a Fiat?
No, it was a Citroën 2CV.
Oh, yeah, 2CV. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
It's a great story. There's
That's amazing.
Whole video about it, and there's people trying to that have done like recreations of what he did.
There was even a Mythbusters episode about that. They wasn't so sure, but it's pretty feasible, and probably the guy really did it.
I got a $50 bet that Netflix comes out with a special documentary about that within the next 5 years. Got to make some bank on it somehow.
Yeah. So, speaking of exams, Jaegers, and not just Jaegers, but you brought up the topic. It feels like that, like the student part or the part that goes or works in university, really dropped off the radar the last few months. I think that's obviously because of the exam periods worldwide. And I don't know if we will have a summer break effect next time, because I honestly don't remember if bot development activity increased or decreased last summer. What do you think? Does it affect the scene in a meaningful way?
I think deadlines towards tournaments affect it. Not necessarily the summer.
We do see new student authors in the fall often, and in the beginning of the spring semester for that might be related to master's or undergraduate research from different universities. But yeah, I agree that most, you know, the amount of effort that goes into bot development is really strongly tied to the tournament schedule.
I really miss that that course that a University of Delft, I think it was called.
Delft.
Yeah, I really liked how they were running a course on that, because I personally feel like that's an easy way to get some people that like games into coding and potentially into AI. But
It's why I'm here.
Yeah, because you were a part of that, right? You were a part of that original group.
Yeah, exactly.
And how many of those people are left that actually still code their bots? I mean, not many, right?
No.
But are those people doing AI or software, or are they, like, they're still, like, at least I hope that it at least maybe sparked some people to stay with their career choice. And it would have been nice if that university kept it going, because you never know that people coming into school, they don't know what they want in high school. So.
Yep, I agree.
Yeah, I think that's just expected, because most of the people who do their bachelor's or master's thesis on a topic will not continue with that topic afterwards. But even if a few authors stay, that's a win. And I was gonna ask about attracting more students to this hobby, but I feel that's more of a duty of people actually working in academia, which none of us are, if I remember correctly.
Not at the moment, so.
And speaking of the social aspect, I was mentioning that a meetup or some kind of get-together conference or whatever you want to call it is something that should be done. And I was thinking a little bit more about that and came to the conclusion that this is a very international community. So no matter where you put it, it will have to be a compromise. And people have to travel a lot. And bearing that in mind, it shouldn't be in any big city, which is expensive and difficult to organize. It could be just some random town or like rent a big house near a lake and get very drunk during the weekend. And what do you think of that thought?
I'd like to have a meetup at some point for the AI developers. I think by default right now, most of the meetup stuff happens at academic conferences where the bots are showcased. So COG or AID, though those mostly cater to academics, are open to the public. And there's not a lot of people that go, but there's probably 2 to 5 people from the community that go to every one of those, that go to those. And it's, it's different people each time. But that's really kind of the only group style event that there are really this time.
Yeah, it would be more like the other way around. It's first and foremost a social event, and we allow academics. We don't kick them out.
Don't make them show up with a paper.
Do you have to be smart to go there, or can I go?
You can go. You can just register for the list and just show up for COG or AID. If you want to publish a paper, the paper has to be accepted and all that, which is a lot more work. But if you just want to go up and show up and go to the conference, you don't have to meet anybody. You just register and show up. COG is in London this year. Last year, I think it was in South Korea. I don't know. They move around. So I don't remember where AID's at this year. I can look.
If it's ever in Canada, I'll go. But I mean, well, no, not Canada, like Ontario.
It was in Canada, I think, 2 years ago in Edmonton.
Damn. If only I was around for that, that would have been pretty easy for me. I have a friend that lives out in Airdrie near it, so.
So, AID is at Georgia Tech in Atlanta. In October.
Oh, wow. Are you going to that? That's close to you.
There
are only a couple states.
I don't know. There's some possibility to go. I don't know where I'm going to be living because I'm in the middle of the job search stuff big time at the moment.
Sure.
I got my diploma last week, my official.
Yeah.
So I'm looking. So I don't know where I'm going to be living at this point.
Yeah, that's fair. I'm just thinking about this and brainstorming because I definitely do not have the time or inclination to organize this right now, no matter how much I want to. But I would like it to be a laid-back affair, of course, with smart people and presentations and engagement, but mostly if you just want to go there, hang out with your bot development buddies or anything, you can just do that.
I'm down.
Like a good example is, I think, DEF CON, which is a very laid-back and quite fun affair. I've never been, but that's the general consensus about it.
Oh. I've been to DEF CON a bunch, so it's fun. We can talk about that later.
All right. Next topic I want to switch to is broadly can be characterized as what makes board games enjoyable. And I know I asked this before, but now I'm asking it harder. I mean, now I'm casting games for the SEC AIT channel, and I want to know what makes you watch a game, or what makes you watch casting a board game. Obviously, casting style and ability has to do a lot with it, and I'm just beginning to learn that. But every tip is welcome.
I think part of watching StarCraft is actually just that it's, I guess it's like chess, but you actually don't know what path someone's going to take. And part of that mystery is kind of what hooks you in, right? You start out, you know, you see the Protoss is sending a probe out of its base at 8 supply. You see that the Zerg is doing like a 4 pool or something. That sort of excitement level keeps you going and then keeps you going to the next game. And then because you've already watched one series, you're just going to watch the next series as well. So part of it is also creating a narrative as well, right? So as a caster, you have to build up that hype, but not, you know, in a cringy or overbearing way that it takes away from the game. Like, that's what I think is what makes Tasteless and Artosis very good, is they're a bit silly, but they build a narrative for the game itself as well.
For me, you know, there's the game itself, and then there's the context that the game sits in, right? And because I know a lot of the authors and I know the background of a lot of the projects and stuff, when I watch the games, I see a lot more than just the game. I see, you know, the personal struggle and effort that went into creating the bot, the speed blocks they run into, current problems that are going on in development, bugs, you know, a host of different factors that, you know, while I'm watching the game that I'm thinking about, right? And I think when you get really into any sort of sport, you get that sort of understand, that deeper level understanding of all the little stuff that's going on. And so I enjoy a lot of it through that route, if that makes sense.
Yeah, like yours is very much a personal narrative. Yours comes from an enjoyment of the game and enjoyment of sharing the experience with.
That's a very good point, and I will keep that in mind.
Because oftentimes, you know, how the bot got to be to this point is a really interesting factor in what is currently going on, and what the author is doing, too. You know, they worked on it for a couple of years, and then they went to school, and then they stopped, and then they got really excited about this, and then that happened, and they couldn't work on it for 6 months, and they forgot half the stuff that they were doing and they started working again. A lot of these bots have stories like that, right? And authors that have backgrounds like that, because a lot of the bots have been around a long time, a lot of years, especially the more competitive ones. And so people go through ups and downs and phases, and, you know, they do big groups of effort for a tournament and then, you know, can't work on it for a few months. And, you know, the, you know, there's a lot of factors that play into the bot that's more than just the game that's being watched.
I like it when the openings are explained from both sides, like the intricacies when like a probe is skipped or those kinds of things, just the openings. That's what I enjoy. And then of course the big battles, but yeah.
Yeah, I think it's good to sort of encapsulate the general strategy that someone is going for so that you are building up the story of, okay, this is going to be the aggressor, this, and pay attention to what they're doing, pay attention to what probes are cutting or what units are building and where and when. You know, for example, some of the KSL games, there was a lot of PvP, and it was just based off of, okay, who lost a goon early or who lost a probe early, and then that, you know, can decide the game very quickly because it changes the builds.
I just personally, I enjoy when it's a little bit silly and I can laugh at the action, but it is explained in a way that I know what's going on, and like in the background, what might be the player thinking, what might be the player missing, and stuff like that.
To me, I see even larger issues too, even beyond just the players and stories. I see conflicts of programming and AI development philosophy in conflict, which is a larger topic, right? Different philosophies of AI development, different development styles competing in an event. You know, different universities have different ways that they approach programming and development, and they have actual, you know, philosophies that they're competing against other universities with, to see which one ideologically will win out. You know, it's sort of like the spread of ideas as a disease, and which idea will win, you know, in the end. And within AI, there's often not a lot of consensus on which idea is best, right? We have a lot of ideas on how to do things, but a good portion of them have never been tried. Some of them have been tried in an academic sense, and some of them had little experiments done, but when you take them to compete, you put them under a level of pressure that is uncomfortable, both for the organization that is putting forth those ideas to be tested and for the people involved in that project. Because what if your philosophy of developing an AI and what an AI should be is wrong? And what if you lose to someone else's philosophy, right? That's a dangerous thing for organizations and universities to put themselves out there. Especially for academics who are often tied to a type or a line of philosophy of development or other factors that influence their development path. And I've spent a fair bit of time thinking about that and the effects of it within this environment.
Yeah, academia is a different beast and might not be best suited for long-term and consistent bot development, but rather testing of ideas and subfields.
Yeah, and it's interesting because, you know, most of the academic projects are not actually designed to be competitive. They're designed to test an idea. But the problem gets to be is if they're purely designed to test an idea, and competitiveness is secondary, how well did they actually test that idea? Because most of the projects, you know, with the demands of academia and how academic projects are designed in such a way that once the idea is implemented, that they will all claim success, is sort of my experience.
Yeah.
And are they really judged then, you know? I don't know, some of this gets into critique of academic ideas in general, but there's some thoughts there that are worth mulling about.
Yeah, like you can't just go in and make these amazing machine learning bots like Facebook without a foundation of strong builds and micro and some hard-coded rules. You can't just test that machine learning because you don't have something that can give you good feedback whether it was successful or not.
Mm-hmm. And I see a lot of academic projects that are run that way, where they completely ignore build orders and strategy, and they implement an idea. and without any of the foundational structures. And if the idea works at all, it becomes a series of papers and is claimed to be successful, but it didn't really compete with other ideas. It just existed alongside them. And I find that sort of troubling, because what did you learn? What did they learn from that? Well, the idea is functional. Does that mean that it is the best among competing ideas? No.
And also, so, implementation is always the harder part, or almost always. Like, ideas are not academic ideas, but ideas in general at dime a dozen. Everyone has a $1 million idea. Somehow they don't get to be millionaires just from that alone.
I'm gonna go with another car analogy. It's like having a self-driving car that doesn't know how big it is, but you can figure out how big it is by smashing it into things. Or, you know, yeah, it'll work, but now you don't have a car, and it will take you a very long time to figure out how big it actually is.
It's like, we're going to teach our car to drive by having infinite numbers of cars to destroy it.
That's
why we virtualize all of this. You know, it's cheaper. And a lot of the implementations that are being done here in the competitive sense have a lot of uses in other places. But I just see a lot of, I've seen several recent academic projects that have been, you know, we implement and we do this idea. It's not competitive. We can claim success versus other ideas. And then, you know, we move on to the next project without really judging how good of an idea or implementation it really was, you know. I don't know. Side topics. Sorry to get you distracted.
No problem. All right, last topic for today, and the one I'm most excited about is, of course, the StarCraft Human and AI League, or SNAIL in short, news and goings on. As you can tell, I'm very passionate about that project. So first of all, let me share you some news. We are almost ready for alpha testing. That means the select few people will test it. It is kind of running, and we do not have all the features yet that we want to add, but the proof of concept is definitely well proved, and it just needs more work. But the main figuring outing part is done. The difficulties we are having is just not having enough development time, and that will go away eventually, but the hard part is figured out. That being said, there were a few questions asked, and I'd like to answer them here. First of all, this will be a Windows-based client. I can understand if you want to run it on other systems, but it is not a priority, as StarCraft itself is a Windows-based game. And if we want to support Linux, and then we have to go with OpenBW, which is a whole order of magnitude bigger work than this. That being said, it's not out of the question.
Oh, you know, 95-99% of the StarCraft player base is on Windows anyway. So, especially when, since this is trying to reach end players, I wouldn't worry about it too much at this stage.
Yeah, the
thing.
So, go on to.
Sorry. I think there was only maybe Cherry Pie was developed on Linux. I can't remember. I think because Dan was the one that ported it to Windows. But I'm not really familiar.
Just talking about humans playing bots and the snail.
Oh, you mean the humans, not the actual bot author. Okay.
Yeah, I'm being dumb. End users are probably humans who are playing on Windows. I mean, they are definitely humans. That was not an attempt to call gamers subhuman, although, you know. But yeah, that's the intended audience.
Yeah, sorry, I misheard that. I was really confused. I was like, does anyone really develop on Linux? Maybe one or two, but no.
There's a couple, not many.
Yeah.
So yeah, the second question I'm answering is what kind of resources will be available. It's one very strong CPU. It resides on the in the Google Cloud, so CPU utilization will probably not be a problem. 1.5 gigabytes of memory. It's not like StarCraft is a memory intensive game by modern standards anyway, and basically unlimited storage you can write to. But of course, if you abuse any of those, you will get banned and I will come to your house and scare your children. That being said, GPU support is not present yet, but it will, I'm not saying it will be, but it is a plan of mine. Now I'd like to ask you to ask me questions about it, or let's just talk about the difficulties and hurdles about this whole project.
I don't have any questions. Yeah, anyways.
Me neither. Interested to see how this will go.
Save my questions and comments for when I get to see a beta. I'm not going to judge you yet.
Yeah, that's fair.
I'll have a bunch once I play with it.
Yeah, that's fair. It is intentionally not open to the public at this stage because you can't really judge that from this stage. But feedback is appreciated. And of course, bot authors can always, bot authors have a priority in testing. So if you're a bot author and want to test it out, contact me and I will make it happen. All right, I thought we will take a lot of time with this, so I didn't prepare any other topics. If you have any, let's talk about those.
We can talk about impatience and how we're just sitting around hitting F5 on COG and COG site, waiting for the participant list to come out so that we can do per author, per bot preparation work. But everyone's doing the same thing. Everybody that's involved in the tournaments, as soon as everybody registers, just sits around the website and hits F5 for like a week.
I really hope people were trying to prepare against my bot because it has changed so much the past 3 months. Like, it's gotten weaker, stronger, completely different in one aspect, completely different. Like, it's been changing so much that if they, like, try to train versus my bot or make, like, a build, it might be 100% win rate versus a version 2 weeks ago, and then it's going to be absolute garbage or something in, like, a month. I don't know. My bot is just, it's all over. I'm waiting for that registration list to see Sida on it. I'm really hoping to see.
Me too. I hope they're on the list.
Coming after you, Sida.
And I just remembered a few other key points about the snail. Sorry for circling back. And feel free to give your opinion on this. So the first thing is, people ask that how public your profile will be, and I will say that as public as you want it to be. I don't want this to be a social media platform. No one has to know that you're playing this. This is something I don't really like, that nowadays you register to any kind of gaming service, you have a visible public profile, and it is unnecessary for the most of the cases.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's good to notify people, but let them be the decision.
Yeah, you have the right to be left alone. And your replays and game data will be available to you, but no data will be collected that is not relevant to the game itself. Like, those are your data as well, so we don't share it with anyone. We might use it for things, but we don't share it with third parties. And another thing is a near-term plan is adding hotkey support, because that is a big thing in Remastered. and many players will miss it. It is technically feasible to add it into the StarCraft client, but it is not the highest priority. But it is on the list and it will be done.
Cool.
All right, that's all I had for today. Thank you very much for being here. This was an interesting conversation, and I hope I will see each and every one of you again. Thank you and goodbye.
Thank you.
Peace, my dudes.